You're listening to Summer Saturday.
Cambridge 105, community radio in your city.
At the events which make Cambridge, this is Summer Saturday.
Good afternoon, live from the Cambridge Corn Exchange for Saturday afternoon. It's Cambridge 105, community radio in your city. We're here until 5 o'clock this evening, mostly covering Eat Cambridge, the main event, which is taking place inside the Cambridge Corn Exchange today. And our reporters, mostly Julian Clover and a little bit of Lee Chambers, will be bringing you some of the people and the stallholders that are in the Cambridge Corn Exchange today. The event takes place until 4 o'clock, so another couple of hours if you want to pop down to the Cambridge Corn Exchange today and buy some very tasty food. I've already cleared out the charcuterie counter and the chocolate stall, so anything else that you want is available. We're also going to be covering the Cambridge Beer Festival because it's the last day of that today. Dom Smith is there and Neil Whiteside has been at Wandlebury Park. So which song should we start with? Which song is an appropriate song for a food fair? Well, this is something I was about an hour ago. This is Cosheen. The track is called Hungry. That's Cosheen and Hungry. I won't stick with the food theme songs throughout the day, don't worry about that. So it's myself, Tim Willett, in our outside broadcast vehicle, Oliver, this afternoon outside Cambridge Corn Exchange, and I'm joined by Julian Clover, who has been patrolling inside so far, chatting to some people, haven't you?
Good afternoon, Tim. Yes, I have. I've never done an outside broadcast from a cycle lane before. It's quite interesting. I lean too much the other way. We could do live traffic reports into the car park, the multi-storey, which is attached to the Grand Arcade, and they're not moving very far at the moment either. Could wander up there in a moment. Anyway, inside, it's very busy indoors. There's been a steady trickle of people through the door since it opened at the Corn Exchange at 10:30 this morning. If you want to come down, it's going to be staying open until 4 o'clock. There's plenty to see. There's a number of food talks going on as well. As you mentioned, the Reverend Chambers is up there learning about cheese, as if she needed to learn anymore. And she'll be down with a report a little later on. There's also a couple of food areas in including from our friends at the Norfolk Street Deli. So yes, I've been speaking to them, and we'll hear that report a little later on. There's also, I guess it's best described as an indoor food market, really, but there's all sorts of things. Well, you sample them yourself, judging by the size of your carrier bag
there. Have you bought anything yet?
I haven't yet, you know.
Well, you want to hurry up, because they were starting to run out of things.
Well, this is the problem, because every time I went in, I thought, oh, that's interesting, I better go and interview this person, and then sort of came out again and did all the editing and the radio stuff, and then I had to go back in again.
Well, I had a time limit, you see, so as I ran around and got everything before 2 o'clock, because I'm stuck
here
now.
There was some very good cheese that I did see on the Gog Magog stand. Mm-hmm. I think there's a few other people doing cheese as well. I might have to go and investigate some of those in a few moments' time, then report back, maybe buying something in the process.
Yep.
Yeah, I've got my washing line next to me. If anybody is coming down and they see an orange, it's like a washing line clothes prop, you know, the sort of thing you put. Yep. And at the top of it, we've got actually it's one side of technology to another. We've got the low tech clothes prop, and then on top of that, we've got the high tech, quite small actually, box of gubbins, which means that I'll speak to everybody back home, and of course you here in Oliver outside. Actually, we're outside Carluccio's, aren't we? Around the back.
We are outside Carluccio's, and we can say that we ate from Carluccio's the other
night.
It's
kind of come full circle, really, hasn't it?
From our
home delivery the other day, and come see them this time around.
Okay, well, we know that we can hear you from inside, so we'll send you off inside, and when you've got something to tell us from inside, we'll cross to you. But we know it all works, and so you've got your broomstick there, so you'll be fine.
I have. I shall fly off on my broomstick.
Just mind the cycles as you exit.
It's a very dangerous exercise, really.
Yeah, look left and right and all that sort of stuff. So we'll come back to Julian in a little while. You'll hear plenty of him this afternoon because he's our chief reporter for Eat Cambridge in the absence of any members of the flavour team today. Julian's taking over the mantle. We've also got some reports from the Beer Festival where Dom Smith has been, and you may have heard some of his reports already this week. We'll be bringing you some of those. And Neil Whiteside's been wandering around Wandlebury Country Park this morning for their spring survey, and we'll bring you a report or few on that. If you want to get in touch this afternoon, if you are running an event or you've been out somewhere or you've been to Eat Cambridge and want to let us know what you think. There's plenty of people, by the way, wandering around with Cambridge 105 carrier bags today, because that's what we're giving out. If you come to Eat Cambridge, you can get yourself a free carrier bag. Merlin is in there handing out the carrier bags. He's named himself as the bag boy today. So if you see bag boy in the foyer, then grab a carrier bag from him. It'd be interesting to see if anybody's listening to us. They get in their car and think, oh, what's this Cambridge 105? And they hear this. Then we'll see. But if you want to get in touch, you can text 07919 070 490. You can email studio at cambridge105.fm, or you can tweet at cambridge105. Julian has gone inside to the Cambridge Corn Exchange, and he has a guest with him.
Yeah, Tim, good afternoon. I'm inside. I'm not actually that far away from you, because I've sort of come in. I'm all the way round into the main part of the Corn Exchange here, and here you've got the food market. And just looking around me, I can see Crane's Premium Cranberry Cider, which we might go and have a chat with a little later on. There's also Candula Jumbo Leaf Tea. I think that's sold quite regularly on the Mill Road. Just ahead of me here, we've got Gog Magog. They've got a very good selection of cheeses. And behind me, Chocolat Chocolat, which is also worth an exploration a little later. But right now, I'm on the stand which belongs to Fiona Patissier. But that's not your real name, is it?
No, my real name is Fiona Skerritt.
Fiona, you won the Cambridge Bake Off in 2013.
That's right.
So was this a direct result of that, that you went into the upmarket cake business, is the simple description?
Yes. So up until the competition, I was a scientist at the University of Cambridge. The competition really opened up doors to me, and then a year on from winning, I then decided to launch the business. Gave up my full-time job, been in academia all my life, but now I'm running this because I'm passionate about it, and you need to do what makes you happy.
That's a tremendous jump. Is it a business? You know, they're lovely cakes, but is there the turnover and the sales all the year round to make it worthwhile?
Well, so far I've only been running since June, and I supply mainly to All Goods of Ely in Ely, Espresso Library in Cambridge, catering companies. I also take private commissions for wedding cakes, and I guess that's where the money comes into it, is through the wedding cakes, because they tend to be bigger orders. But certainly the macaroons are what have taken off. But doing something like this today has allowed me to do much more broader range of patisserie, which I love to do. Being a scientist, I love all that intricate.
So in a way, it's interesting, because I guess to a certain extent, there's an element of science in there, isn't there? The quantities, or what happens when you heat this at a certain level, and what happens when you turn it up a bit further.
Yeah, it's very much chemistry, and I particularly love the patisserie because of that. I tinker with this, tinker with that. In the lab, when an experiment went wrong, it would go catastrophically wrong. Here, if it goes wrong in the kitchen, you at least get to eat it. It tastes pretty good. It might look awful, but it tastes good. So that's something, that's a bonus.
And where do you work from? Do you work from home?
Yes, so we have a small house in Ely, and I'm currently baking out of the kitchen there, which is a bit of a nightmare.
Did you need to do any modifications to it? Because obviously you're going to need it for a fully functioning kitchen in your house the rest of the time.
So we have three freezers, one in the bedroom, one under the stairs, and one in the dining room. So that's a bit of a challenge, but I'm hoping to expand and get some commercial kitchen space at some point. But at the moment, keeping costs down, of course, and trying to do as much as I can from home.
So describe to me what we've got in front of here. First of all, these rather nice yellow tartlets. And what flavour is causing that lovely yellow colour?
Yeah, that's passion fruit. So I've got passion fruit, and there's a touch of cocoa in the pastry case to add a bit of chocolate to it. And then next to it is the raspberry delice, which is a dacquoise, a sponge, a raspberry ganache with Chambord syrup, a French buttercream with fresh raspberries. So a lot of layering going on there. And we did have salted caramel slices, macaroons, and coffee cake. Yeah.
The victim of your own success, by the sounds of things.
Yeah, well, so I've never done the Eat Cambridge before, so I didn't know how much to make. So I'm really pleased that people have been hungry. Even at 10:30, people were buying cake. It's brilliant.
I'm guessing you've been here as a visitor, have you, in previous years?
No, because it's bank holiday weekend. We're often at one of our families, Birmingham or Wales. So I've actually never been. So it's great to be here at the, you know, on this end of things.
Have you had a chance to get around, or have you been stuck here with the macaroons for most of the morning?
I haven't actually done a circular yet, but I certainly will do. Yeah.
Okay, well, Fiona, thank you very much for speaking to Cambridge 105. These look lovely. I rather suspect I might have to purchase one before I make it back to the van. Tim, I might be a while.
That's all right. You take as long as you need. You've got to buy something while you're here. You can't come to a food fair and leave empty-handed.
Oh, no. I've also got my personal washing line as well, which is coming with me at all times. So we'll we can put a carrier bag at the top.
Well, make sure you buy your personal washing line holder at something as well for his work.
There's ice creams over here.
Oh, buy him an ice cream.
Do you want an ice cream, David?
Oh, yes.
He wants an ice cream. Okay. I'll hand back to you, Tim. We'll speak later.
All right. Thank you very much. Julian will be back with him very shortly indeed. We're going to play you a track from the Saturdays now. This is Up. That's Cambridge 105, live from Cambridge Corn Exchange for Eat Cambridge 2015, a big food and drink fair showcasing what local providers from Cambridge and the surrounding area have to offer. If you've got a bit of free time, want to come down, it's open till 4 o'clock. It's £2 entry for adults, and that gets you into to all of the different stores. And if you do come along, grab yourself a Cambridge 105 carrier bag to put your shopping into, because I guarantee that it's a good idea. And they're strong. No one's had any things dropping at the bottom of them yet, so that's good. And they do fit your shopping in, unlike records. In the meantime, it's Summer Saturday on Cambridge 105, live from just outside the Cambridge Corn Exchange. And inside, Julian Clover has been talking to many of the storeholders so far before we came on air around lunchtime. And one of those that he was talking to earlier on this morning was the Cambridge Organic Food Company.
So, Duncan, one of the parts of your business here is these little boxes that people get delivered full of vegetables and fruit, I guess, as well. But here, it's going to be organic, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, that's exactly what we are. It's the Cambridge Organic Food Company. So it's not only organic, it's also locally produced. We represent, you know, every organic farm that's local to Cambridge, and that's what goes into our boxes.
There's quite a popularity for these services now. I see around my house lots of these boxes getting delivered. And it's a bit of a problem about this sort of thing. People don't have the time. They can't necessarily go out and go to all the shops like they might once have done. But, of course, the problem is they're not in either to get the boxes. How do you deal with all of that?
It's not a problem. Most of the deliveries that we do are to people's homes when they're not in to take it in. And everybody has given us some instructions about where they'd like the box to be left in their absence, and that's absolutely fine by us. So.
I guess the other worry for these things is that you get something that you don't like. You know, I'm allergic to peas, believe it or not. I would be concerned that every week there would be peas for me, which I wouldn't be able to do anything with.
Not a problem at all. I mean, you're quite right. That is a criticism that is often levelled at the box scheme model, but you know, we like to think that we've got something for everyone, and we overcome that particular objection.
So I could tell you that no peas for me. I'd rather have broccoli.
Absolutely.
Or artichoke or whatever.
We do consider our flagship product is our original box, which exclusively contains produce from local farms, and as such doesn't give customers the option of choosing what goes into it. That's exceptional value for money because we can pack them efficiently. But we also do ranges of boxes that allow people to specify things that they like and dislike. And we even do completely bespoke boxes so people can visit our website and say, right, this week I want my box to have tomatoes and asparagus and radishes, whatever it is that they might want to have.
The local farm aspect is also quite interesting because I'm guessing this is opening up for some farmers a market that previously wasn't available to them.
Yes, the box scheme model was originally designed for that very purpose. It was the way in which an organic farmer that sort of couldn't really market their produce through the conventional outlets, but by necessity they needed to go and market their produce directly, and that's how the box scheme was born. So I mean, from the consumer's point of view, it's absolutely amazing, because if you want access to local produce, and you know, if you buy into the concept of organic, then people really do appreciate that local is a very important aspect of that as well in terms of sustainability, then you know, the organic box scheme is how you achieve that.
And how many people are you employing now?
We've got a staff of 10. I'm very proud to say, we are one of the largest locally orientated box schemes in the UK. And considering that Cambridge is a fairly small city, I think that's absolutely amazing. And it really says a lot about people in Cambridge. I think, dare I say it, you've got intelligent people that have studied climate change. You've got like the Antarctic Survey taking place here. So there are people in Cambridge that really appreciate the issues surrounding the food industry, appreciate the importance of sustainability within the food industry, and want to buy from a scheme such as ours.
And you've recently gained living wage accreditation as well. How important is it to you to have that flag?
Our other sort of very thing that we're very proud of at the moment, we're actually the first food business around Cambridge to get living wage accreditation. It was an obvious decision for us to make, in all honesty. It's very much in line with the ethical and sustainable values that underpin our business. We really sort of value our staff, and you know, to pay anything sort of less than the living wage is sort of incongruous with that.
And in Cambridge, how does that work for you as an event this year?
Great. I mean, we've had sort of people crowding around our stand all morning, and my colleague Brian here has been doing a fantastic job of engaging with people. It's just great to meet people, tell them about what we're doing, and get them to try some of our products as well.
Well, Duncan, thanks very much for your time. I better let you get back to that queue. It was slightly worried I'm standing in the way of people and their customers, but thanks very much.
No, thank you very much for coming over.
That was Julian talking earlier on, a little bit earlier on today, to the Cambridge Organic Food Company. And rather confusingly, I told you there'd be an awful lot of Julian today, he is now live in the Cambridge Corn Exchange with some guests.
I am indeed. Thanks very much, Tim. I'm at the stand of Pinkster Gin, which is a local firm, and the gentleman who runs that's name is Stephen, and he's with me now. Stephen, tell me the story of how you went from being an accountant to a gin salesman.
Well, not a gin salesman, I actually make the gin. I mean, obviously, a lot of selling involved as well, but actually, I make it too. I was running another business. I've been making gin for about 10 years, and I decided, because I needed a gin I could drink with food, and I had to make it myself. Friends persuaded me that I ought to do it commercially, and I kept saying, have you any idea how much money is required to do it commercially? And then they said, look, we'll find the money, you find the time and effort.
So this moved from being a hobby then through to a business. Is presumably just looking after you and your family now.
It is indeed, and I've now got 8 employees. We're starting to sell Pinkster Gin around the world.
And this is locally made and with mostly locally ingredients as well?
Yes, absolutely. One of the things that makes it pink, well, the thing that makes it pink, is actually is raspberries. And the raspberries are grown at Impington and Milton. I make the gin in a village called Barley, just outside Royston. So it is all very local.
And the styling is quite impressive. We're able to persuade David to move over with us towards the stand where Alice is serving a few customers. Alice is also a regular contributor to Cambridge 105, we discovered. She's heard on Flavour doing wine reviews these days. But today she's sat behind the counter, or stood behind the counter, with this wonderful bottle type of... Would you call it a bottle?
Sorry, it's a gin spencer.
A gin spencer, okay. And it's pink colour, which is coming from the raspberries. And the styling on the bottles, that's also a lot of thought has clearly gone into that side of things too.
Yes, I have as well as an accountancy background, I have a marketing background. So we spent a long time trying to get the look of the bottle right.
And where is it sold? It's sold locally, I believe, with which company?
We sell a lot through Cambridge Wines. We're also with Noel Young Wines and with many farm shops and delis around Cambridge.
And do they push the local side of it as well?
Yes, they do. Yes. And actually, it's been very nice. Everybody's really taken it aboard and are pushing it.
And also on the marketing side of things, you've got this flyer here, the card with it's Colonel Pinkster, isn't it? Who's this sort of old buffer with his smoking jacket, and naturally a glass of Pigster in hand as well.
Yes. And well, we thought with a pink gin, it would be very easy to go down the pink route. But we felt that it was better that we had a masculine counterweight to the colour. And so we came up with Colonel Pinkster.
And I noticed that Colonel Pinkster takes his gin with mint. Is that the best way to have it?
That's right. Mint and raspberries are natural bedfellows. And so we recommend serving Pinkster with spanked mint.
How do you spank mint?
Well, you take. I've got some mint in my hand here. You take mint leaves, you tear them, and then you put them in your palm of your hand, and clap them.
And then crush.
And crush them. Because what you're trying to do is you taste mint through your nose. So it's the aroma of the mint that you want. And you want that on the top of the glass. And that really enhances the raspberry flavour that comes through in the gin.
And I noticed you said a little earlier on that one of the reasons that you got into making gin, at least as a hobby to start off with, was because you wanted to find a gin which worked with your food. Is it like wine, where you kind of have to almost match the gin to the food?
Yes, in a way it is. I mean, I wanted gin like something I could drink all evening, because I couldn't drink beer or wine, and I couldn't find anything in the market that would do that. Pinkster is very, very smooth. What the raspberries do is take the edge off the juniper, and that then enables it to go with food. It goes very well with seafood. We've got a number of Michelin-starred restaurants in London, fish restaurants, who the only gin they serve is Pinkster.
How does it differ, though, from the commercial gins? There's a number of available. What gives you the edge over? Because they can add flavourings, and some of them do.
It's all down to the quality of the ingredients. We make this with fresh raspberries. These raspberries are in our gin within 4 hours of being picked locally. And it's the freshness and quality of the ingredients that makes the difference.
I can't really stand by some gin without actually having a little sample of some to taste what it might be like.
There you go,
Julian. Tim can tell me which Ofcom code I'm probably about to break.
I think you probably know more than that than I do.
I probably do. I'm sure there's a paragraph on it. Doesn't matter when it tastes delicious. it's distinct flavour, and you can certainly feel the raspberries coming through in this.
Yeah, you can. It also makes a mean martini, and is available in many bars and restaurants across the city.
Well, Stephen, thank you very much. I shall gently sip the rest of this whilst we move over to our next guest. So Pinkster Gin is something which is possibly worth having a little sample of. Stephen, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. And alongside me now, we've got Kay. Now, Kay is one of the recycling champions of Cambridge City Council. And I know we've had a couple of them in a Cambridge 105 in the past. And Kay is presumably going around here doing just taking my gin from me. It's horrifying.
Is she going to recycle it?
I don't know. We'll look after the gin. That's fine. We'll take care of that. Kay has got a survey here. Good afternoon, Kay.
Good afternoon. This is all about food waste. In England, we waste far too much food. And we've got a set of questions to ask you. What do you think in people in general, and how people in general waste food, and how much of that applies to you?
Okay, so what we're going to do then, you've got, how many questions are there altogether?
Four
questions. So we're going to go through these, and I'm going to answer them, and Tim's going to answer them as well. If Kay, you'd like to ask the questions then.
What do you think is the main food waste in England? Is it buying too much food? Supermarkets bog offs? Are you tempted by them? Do you think we actually try to eat more healthily? Is food going out of date too quickly? Are we cooking too much when we cook? Are we not using up our leftovers when we cook too much? Do you think that living alone as a single person is a problem? And not knowing how to cook food, fresh food. We would go to Iceland and buy a packet of vegetables, but if we went to the market or the supermarket and bought fresh vegetables, would we actually know what to do with it?
Okay, Tim, what do you think is the answer to that?
Lots of different options there.
There is. It's a multiple choice question like none other.
So can I only pick one of those?
Can Tim pick one, or is he allowed to pick more than one?
You pick as many as he wants.
Many as you like. Okay. Just choose three here if you want to.
All right, well, if I pick three, I would pick... one that I would pick would be that we're buying too much in the first place.
Buying too much, yes. I think I'd probably agree with that one.
That is a very good general one for me.
Not using up leftovers.
Oh, yeah, the leftovers one, of course, is the other other one. F is listed here, isn't it?
Yes.
This is just in general, not personally.
Maybe food going out of date too quickly, I don't know.
Yeah, food going out of date too quickly is the other one. You see, I would say these supermarket offers, that the buy one, get one you don't need for half price, that's often I find. It's tempting, but then you get home and you realise, well, you know, you need
to
have
some... use all that up? How am I going to use it up?
Well, I don't know. This is the problem. I go around with my sort of, this is what I'm going to make, and then if I get too much of it, I don't know what to do with the rest.
She made an interesting point, actually, because I'm a single person, and I find that you can't get things that portion sizes are too big.
Yeah, Tim's making a good point here about portion sizes when you go into a shop, and, you know, you just, if you're single, you just can't cope with what's offered. Buying too much. You're buying too much, Tim.
Oh, okay.
Supermarkets now are starting to do smaller persons for a single person.
Meal for one, yeah.
Yeah, the sort of meal for one things, Tim
I'm
says.
I'm going shopping after this in about half an hour. And I know that I will be able to walk into the supermarket, the one I use. They do smaller portions.
Let's go on to the second question then. And this is the one about any of these apply in your home. If so, which one? And what do we have here? It's buying too much. Just the first option. Then we've got back to those supermarket offers again. Obviously, the same collection, really. Sort of. Which ones do you think apply to you, Tim, out of that list which Kay went through a little while
ago?
Sorry,
what was the question?
It was ones which actually apply in your home of that nice long list. So the buying too much, supermarket offers, trying to eat healthily, food going out of date too quickly, cooking too much, not using those leftovers, living alone, which you mentioned.
Well, I think the
and
three...
not knowing how to cook with fresh ingredients.
No, I know how to do that. I think the three that I said, I think buying too much in the first place because of supermarket offers, the portion sizes are too big for someone like me. I don't have a massive appetite, generally speaking, and I think some food does go off too quickly. You buy things in supermarkets and the sell-by dates are only a few days after you bought them. Whether that's necessarily means you can't eat them or not, I don't know, but I personally don't tend to eat things after the date that's printed on the packet.
Yeah, again, Tim, yes, as Tim says, it's the buying too much. In his case, it's not not necessarily not knowing what to do with the fresh ingredients. It's when you the portion sizes are too much, where you have no choice other than to buy too much. Some of the time is the issue.
It's actually finding when you cooked it what to do with it.
Do you think we've lost that skill? Is that one of the problems here?
This is one of the quick skills that H applies very much so, because people, I was always taught to cook. Other people, the younger generation, they've not been taught to cook. They took cookery lessons out of schools, and their parents never really had time to teach them to cook. That's just a personal opinion.
No, it's a valid one too.
I think it's a very valid point.
So shopping habits then. Do you usually check what food you have and make a list before you go shopping? I make half a list. That's kind of what I tend to do, which is dangerous. Tim, what do you do when you head out to your local supermarket?
Yeah, I make a list, whether it's a mental list or a physical list of things that I do need, but I will always walk out of the supermarket with more things than I've got written down.
Yeah, snap. Tim's another list person. Of course, that problem of going into the supermarket with some things in mind and coming out with others.
I was going to say, does he actually stick to that list? Because very few... I find, actually, that women are much better at sticking to a list, but men are sort of more tempted.
Yes, tempted.
My house absolutely terribly... We go shopping, and he always puts about 12 or things in the basket, you know, and my meagre 7 or 8 bits are there.
Yeah, and the final question is about the old date labelling, which is always an interesting one, isn't it? Do you ever throw away food because it's past the date on the label and... sell by, use by, display until, or best before? It's half the trouble is working out what those dates mean.
It's very important. Something like we always put forward a point about cheese. If you've got cheese and you've bought it, you're quite fine. It's got a short sell by date. Then you look in your fridge a few days later and you've made whatever you're going to make, your pasta or whatever, and you've used the cheese. But you've still got a piece left and it's got a nice white markings on it. What do? Do you chuck it away or do you scrape those nice white markings off?
No, cut those markings off and then eat the rest of the cheese on the spot. That's normally my method.
That's the majority of people.
That's a good one. So, Kay, I'm interested in this. You're, um, you employed by the council, or is this a volunteer role?
I'm actually a volunteer. I'm a tenant of Cambridge City Council. And some years ago, I started with a resident association. And from then on, it's sort of grown. I'm actually an elected tenant of Cambridge City Council.
Elected?
Elected tenant of Cambridge
City. There's some elections we didn't cover on air.
Ah, then there is an election next year in 2016 for tenants and a leaseholder rep for Cambridge City Council. And we work on all the housing. And we work with councillors. We sit at meetings. We listen to the points of various points of bits and pieces. We actually help set the rents each year. So we listen to all the financial works and everything like that. And there are six tenant reps and one leaseholder. With other things that we do, we sort of apply. Some of us actually sit on a committee that look at the new buildings that have been Cambridge.
Oh, interesting. I think we need to... I think, Kay, we need to talk to you again another day about this. That's a very interesting area.
Walk back with a telephone number, and you can leave a message on my answer phone.
Might very well.
We'd be more than willing
There's
to...
an offer.
As I say, there are seven of us, so I think... at least six and a half of us would be more than willing to talk.
That's good. We won't mention what the half's up to. Okay, thank you very much for your time. The guiding us through this this survey this afternoon. I'm running out of hands, so my gin's being removed again. Okay, good to meet you. Thanks very much indeed. I'm going to see what I can do with the rest of this gin now, Tim. I'll speak to you later.
Oh, well, Julian, so you've learned how to spank mint and you've now got an offer of leaving a message on a lady's answer phone. So it's a great afternoon for you, isn't it?
Yes, there's nothing like a good bit of spanked mint on a Saturday afternoon.
Oh, dear. Right, thank you very much. We'll cross back to you in a little while. You're listening to Summer Saturday on Cambridge 105 Community Radio in your city. I thought I'd hear the term spanked mint on the radio before. It's 6 minutes past three, it's Saturday afternoon, and we are live here at the Cambridge Corn Exchange for Eat Cambridge. It's a big local food fair with food traders and producers. And we'll hear plenty more from the Eat Cambridge Food Fair over the remaining 2 hours of the show today. We'll also be heading down to Jesus Green, where Dom Smith has been reporting on the Cambridge Beer Festival. That draws to a close today. And we'll be back with Neil Whiteside at Wandlebury Country Park. If you want to get in touch with us today, you can text 07919 070400. You can tweet at Cambridge105, or you can email studio at cambridge105.fm. Drive's presenter is now talking to one of the storeholders where I bought some sausages and meats from earlier on.
I am indeed. Thank you very much, Tim. I'm alongside Andrew Sedgwick from the Sedgwick's Charcuterie. And Andrew, this is a relatively new business. You've been going, I think, for less than a year.
That's right. We started trading initially towards the end of last June, where we did a few farmers markets and very rapidly completely sold out. So we took a bit of time off and came back sort of September time, really, as our sort of real first launch. So it's our first time at Eat today.
And when I popped round to ask you if you wanted to have a chat with us on the radio, because my first completely wrong question was, you must have worked for somebody else previously, but you were a teacher, you were telling me.
Yeah, I used to be a geography teacher for 7 years at Sawtooth Community College, just north of Huntingdon, loved my job as teaching, but various sort of family things came together, which meant both me and my wife were working full-time, and one of us needed to step back a little bit from the full-time job. So I set up this business that gave us a bit more flexibility, which we needed with our family at home. And it's been going fantastically. We've had a very busy day today.
So what do you have? Do you have a shop at home, or do you just cure the meats within the house? How do you organise things?
So we have a 5-acre small holding where I keep the pigs completely free range.
Was that way? Did you have that anyway, or
no? We lived in the village of Fendrayton, and so we'd always talked of having a small holding, but we'd always said, "Oh, we'll do it in 5 years." And 5 years came round, and still doing the same thing. So we kind of took the opportunity of me stopping work to take the move and take the punt and do it, really.
You got to play the Tom and Barbara Good moment, which came from.
So the first year, we the aim was self-sufficiency, and we had about 9 months growing all our own veg and rearing our own chickens, ducks and pigs. Well, we kind of figured out and put the infrastructure in place to get the business up running, and we're now rearing all the pigs there. I converted one of the outbuildings into a butchery and curing room, where I edit the salamis, hams and chorizos that we produce. And it's all done from home. We don't have a shop there, but I'm always there to kind of sell. We do sell quite a lot direct from the place as well.
So a lot of mail orders and events like this is where most of the sales take place?
Most of the sales are direct at the moment. So we do St. Ives and Ely Farmers Market on a regular basis. We then do one-off events like Eat Today. We also sell online, as it can be put through the post. Our products are safe at ambient temperatures. And we're starting to supply one or two other places, like the larder at Burwash, one or two other places, pubs and restaurants as well.
Talk me through a couple of the items which you have on your little stall here and what you might have done to them along the way.
So there's kind of two main streams, if you like. We've got salamis and chorizos, which are essentially the same process, just different spicings. And that's effectively minced pork with different flavourings, which initially go through a fermentation process and then are hung and air dried for about a month, often more. And then we also have the slice packs of air dried pork, which think Parma ham or prosciutto, but we use different cuts. We use the collar of pork, which is a really dark, rich cut, which I also put a bit of smoke through. And then we also use loin of pork, which is a very light, delicate flavour, where we add a little bit of fennel and some honey from our beehives. And I also do one with some paprika in as well, just to give it a little bit of hint of smokiness through there too.
My eye is cast on the wild venison chorizo. Now, are you looking after deer and as well on close to where you are?
No, the venison chorizo is half pork, half venison, actually. Okay. If you make it just out of venison, it comes out too hard. And I have a friend who's part of a shooting syndicate in Northamptonshire, and I buy the venison, which is wild fallow deer, direct from him.
And you mix that in with your own pork, do you, from the small holding?
That's right. And the beef that I use to make the brassola is local beef, which I buy through Leeches in Melbourne.
Right, all very much locally developed, locally sourced, and locally sold as well.
That's the plan. So the cider salami is locally produced cider. I use hazelnuts from my hedgerow in autumn to make the hazelnut salami, and I try to keep it as local as possible. And also trying to get some British provenance into the products. I don't just want to copy Italian, French, Spanish flavoured salamis. We're trying to introduce a few British flavours into there too.
Well, Andrew, thank you very much for speaking to us. Whilst we've been talking, I noticed a little queue has gathered behind us, so I better let go and serve some of your customers. But thanks for speaking to Cambridge Wi-Fi.
Thank you very much.
There we are, Tim. I'm sort of delaying sales here by the same thing.
Yeah, he hasn't lost any sales.
I didn't think so. I didn't see anybody wander around. They're all very loyal, actually. And there's some pretty good stuff there, which is all neatly packed. It's quite interesting, really, that, you know, you would perceive that it would be, you know, the supermarkets that used this particular sort of plastic style film packaging, but actually Andrew is using it as well, and I guess that's the kind of packing you need if he's then going to slip it into the postal system for some of his online customers as well. It's using the most practical method, I guess. Yeah. Everybody's gone on the days of wrapping something up in a paper bag.
Yeah, he wraps up what you buy very nicely as well. I said I had one of the garlic salami earlier on, and he wrapped it in some very nice paper, so that was very nice. Yeah, it's almost a shame to unwrap it, but I will do.
Yeah, very much so. What I'm going to do now, I'm going to have a little wander off. I've got my eye on the chocolate counter, and we should probably also catch up with Heidi as well, who's one of the organisers here, to see how the day's gone.
Yeah, if you head on to Chocolat Chocolat, I'm actually eating some of their buttons at the moment, and they're very tasty.
Do you think we should stock up on your chocolate button supply whilst we're here?
Well, I've bought plenty, but I definitely recommend trying them, because they are very tasty. Unfortunately, once you've had one, I now can't stop myself from having the rest of the packet.
No, I'm also eyeing up crisps here at the moment.
I've bought crisps as well, yes.
You know, it's a complete weakness of mine.
Yeah, crisps are good.
I'm going to have to one on one. Anyway, I shall head towards the chocolate, and we'll speak to you again in a few moments' time.
Okie dokie. It's 25 minutes to four. It's Summer Saturday from Cambridge 105, and live from Eat Cambridge in Cambridge Corn Exchange.
Sam and Dave, hold on, I'm coming. It's Summer Saturday from Cambridge 105, and we are live on the Chocolat Chocolat stand, where I've got a couple of people with me, and first of all, I'm going to introduce you to...
Hello, my name's Lisa.
And Lisa is here, and she is doing some coating. Now, what's in the little tub in front of you?
Here we've got some toasted hazelnuts, which we're just coating on the outside So we've got some truffles that we've rolled, and then we're dipping them in melted dark chocolate and then into the hazelnuts.
This is kind of a staged process, really, isn't it? Because you've got, on the one hand, the chocolate would have been made a little earlier on, and then there's some other ingredients going on to sort of add that freshness, if you like.
Definitely. My boss, Isabel, made all of the truffles last night, working away. And then she brought them into us, and then Sarah and myself have rolled them and dipped them. So
rolling them around there with the spoon and making sure that they're covered all the way through.
Yeah, making sure they're all covered, and then taking them out, popping them onto a greaseproof tray, and then we cut them up and give them out as samples.
And if in the, when they're not acting as samples, when they're being served, I don't know, perhaps at a party for something after dinner maybe, do they have to be eaten straight away? Because I guess there's elements of them which would lose their freshness.
I mean, if they actually last that long anyway.
That is a very good point.
Amazing. You can, I mean, you should really eat them straight away. They'll last a few days, as obviously they contain fresh cream. So, yeah, they should be eaten as soon as, really.
Okay, let's wander over here and have a quick word with Isabel. It's been drafted in by David to hold my washing line pole, which is the high-tech situation we have here. Isabel, this is lovely. We've got all sorts chocolates here.
Thank you.
And the Chocolat name is pretty well known, particularly in Cambridge now. The distinctive, it almost looked like a mint chocolate logo, which you have above some of the stores.
We are well known. We've been here 6 years now, and we have an established clientele. Well known for our ice cream, handmade ice cream, and for making our chocolate in the window. We make it every day.
Yes, no, I've been past many an occasion and see, well, you can't really see the people gathered around and looking at it. But chocolate's changed in Britain, hasn't it, I think, in recent years. It's gone up market. You know, there's still the traditional bars that have always been with us, the Cadburys, the Mars, but there's almost like an added layer which has gone in on top.
I think we're spoilt for choice. A lot more entrepreneurs and small businesses starting up for all kinds of things. You know, you've seen cupcakes starting up and things like that. But I think also, yes, I think the British are getting a bit more sophisticated in their palates. Not that they were terribly unsophisticated before, but they didn't have the opportunity to taste lots of varied different types of chocolates. And now that so much has come over from Europe and from other parts of the world, different kinds of chocolate, there's so much choice out there.
Is this a variation on things like pasta, as a good example? We didn't used to eat pasta, or even pizza for that matter, in Britain, not that long ago. Certainly not on a regular basis or on the quantities of which that's happening now. It's happening really across the food business.
I think social network and social media and everything has really brought any international food into the UK much more. But I also think that people generally, especially with chocolate, there isn't that much adventure or moving forward. You know, we still like our salted caramel. New flavours people are quite scared to try, although they pretend they like it. For example, there's a new recipe coming up, which is milk chocolate and licorice. People don't want to try that. They buy it for their friends, but they're a bit scared about having it.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you see the big chocolate manufacturers, and all of a sudden you'll get Kit Kat with orange flavour, or a dark version, and limited edition, which is often a euphemism for we're not really sure if this is going to work in the market, so we're going to try it anyway.
Limited edition is very much buy it while you can. Mm. That's the new thing. You can only buy it for a certain amount of time, so I'd better buy it now. And chocolate's very unusual in that it's a lovely small purchase, a treat that doesn't cost much money or doesn't have to. So it's a feel-good factor. If you treat yourself with a little bit of chocolate, it makes you feel good, makes you happy. And you should be eating chocolate every 20 minutes, because chocolate actually increases your blood sugar levels and makes you happy. But your sugar levels will go back down after 15 to 20 minutes. So if you want to stay happy, chocolate every 20 minutes, I'm afraid.
Oh, I like that as a plan. The selection we have here, we've got macaroons and and clearly chocolate buttons. And what are these here?
These are little samples of our brownies, fresh chocolate brownies.
Ah, right. I might have to have a little sample of that. And in the store in Cambridge, what's the best-selling item?
Best-selling item is our sheet chocolate, which is caramel, praline and sea salt, which I made for a special about 5 years ago for a month. And there was uproar when I stopped making it. So we make it three times a week at the moment.
Ah, brilliant. So, Tim, how are you doing? Have you gotten through your chocolate buttons yet?
I must have more chocolate by the sounds of it.
Are you not happy enough? Is this the issue here?
I'm very happy, but I need to eat more chocolate to sustain me to the rest of the show.
I shall do my best to come back and provide for some with you. Isabel, thank you very much
for speaking to us.
And thanks to everyone here. Yes, I think I might have to make sure I'm happy enough before I come back to the van.
I think we need an alarm or something after every 20 minutes. I need more chocolate alarm.
Good idea.
Yes, I think so. All right, thank you very much, Julian. We'll be back with you shortly.
At the events which make Cambridge, this is Summer Saturday.
Summer Saturday from Community Radio in your city, Cambridge 105. It's almost 10 to 4. We're here until 5. Lots more to come from Eat Cambridge. We'll also be crossing over to Jesus Green shortly for the Cambridge Beer Festival. First, though, Julian is with Simon Fraser from Hot Numbers.
I am indeed. Thanks again, Tim. Simon, hello. Good afternoon. Spending quite a bit of time on Cambridge 105 at the moment.
I am. Good afternoon.
That's good to see you again as well. How have you found Eat Cambridge? You've got quite a good position here when you can view all the different stalls and the numbers of people. It's quietening down a little bit now, but it's been quite busy earlier on, hasn't it?
Certainly has, yeah. And I think they were quite grateful when we fired up the coffee machine early this morning for all the traders. So, yeah, it's always nice to... And that's my favourite time of the day, the morning, when you can fire up the machine, smell the coffee and all these wonderful flavours coming out. And actually, everyone really appreciates that. I mean, it's my favourite time of the morning to drink coffee.
Yeah, it's not that your place on Gwydra Street is particularly empty. There seems to be plenty of people coming in for coffee then. And, of course, you've got your new shop on the other side of town. How's that doing?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, Trumpington Street is where we wanted the roastery to be situated, and we've now got that into the back there. So if you go into the back, it's all sort of built around the coffee roaster. So, yeah, I mean, it's a lot more coffee-focused than Gwydra Street once was. However, saying that, we've just revamped it completely, and we've switched sides. So... now you'll find all the coffee paraphernalia into the gallery side, and we've got a lovely kind of 5 metre long coffee bar there.
Because Chris has moved out, I think, Chris Williams, yes. Who Van Williams Art on that site. Well, initially he was your neighbour until he knocked the wall through, I seem to remember.
He was, yeah. We had a great collaboration and still got a good friendship, and it's just kind of, yeah, I mean, it's over time it just kind of... just dispersed.
I'm going to ask you a variation of a question that I asked Isabel across the way there at Chocolat Chocolat not so long ago. British coffee tastes, they've got a bit more sophisticated, really, haven't they, in recent years? And it's not just the folks from Seattle who have caused this. There's shops like Hot Numbers in lots of different places around the UK, and it's changing our palate a bit.
Certainly is. I mean, they call it the third wave coffee culture, so, I mean, it was all happening about 10 years ago in Australia, and when I was sort of visiting at the time, I just thought, my God, why isn't this happening over here? And it's taken quite a while to actually, you know, come about. But I mean, certainly in London, if you go there, there's fantastic offerings there, and they're starting to make their way, you know, everywhere now, and right up to the north. And you go into the lakes and you'll see some wonderful stuff happening in Keswick as well, in little coffee bars all over the place now. So it's great. You get a high-end offer. I mean, the chains actually have done... I can't dismiss chains completely, because they've done their fair share of actually creating a coffee culture, and then we're sort of expanding on that.
Well, one might argue it's recreating a coffee culture, because the thing which I always find completely mystifying is that, I grew up in the, I guess, ostensibly the early 70s and into the 80s, and in the early 70s there were like the last traces of the milk bars and the other coffee houses which had been around in the 1950s and 1960s, and then for whatever reason, for 25 years, we managed to do without them, and now they're back again. That's something which I can't really explain. I know things go in and out of fashion, but that's kind of taking it to extreme.
So from the coffee houses back to the pub culture, now back to both.
Indeed.
But yeah, no, I mean, certainly I think coffee has improved in its quality significantly, and like a lot of the brewing of beer, actually now you get a lot of these sort of American hops, which is very popular at the moment. We're roasting coffee lighter now, we're serving a lot of cold brew coffee. I mean, there's just interesting brewing methods going on and flavor profiles, so people are kind of getting wind of this. It's a higher end coffee experience, and a lot of people, I mean, the technology has improved and people are brewing great stuff at home, and there's going to be a lot of home roasting coming up as well. So
the next wave, having all been kitted out with coffee machines.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly the coffee, but there's the whole sort of method of making coffee, the barista training that's behind it as well. So you need good machinery, you need the knowledge to make the coffee. It's not rocket science, but it requires some attention, you know, and some passion.
I'm sure you'll be able to kid us out with the relevant beans for roasting. Simon, we better go, but thanks very much for chatting to us. And Tim, back to you.
Thank you very much. That's Julian talking to Simon Fraser, who is the proprietor of Hot Numbers, now got a new store on Trumpington Street, as he mentioned. It's Cambridge 105. It's just gone 4 o'clock. It's Saturday afternoon. It's summer Saturday. And we are here live broadcasting outside the Cambridge Corn Exchange, just on Corn Exchange Street, just outside Carluccio's, and next to a few white vans. And for the final hour, I'll be concentrating purely on Eat Cambridge. We'll be talking to the Norfolk Street Deli. We'll also be talking to The Snug. Julian's got a chat with the Cambridge Carbon Footprint and the English Spirit Distillery. As well as that, we'll be catching up with the organisers of Eat Cambridge and finding out how they think proceedings have gone today. If you want to get in touch with us for the final hour, you can text 07919 070490. You can email us, studio@cambridge105.fm, or you can tweet at Cambridge105. The best that I can. As Hootie and the Blowfish and Hold My Hand. I think Kay, that we spoke to earlier on, would like to hold Julian's hand. She likes you. It's Summer Saturday from Cambridge 105. It's 12 minutes past four. And earlier on, Julian was speaking to Caroline, who is the proprietor of the Norfolk Street Deli.
So I'm with Caroline from the Norfolk Street Deli, and we're upstairs here at the Corn Exchange. And Caroline, you've kind of recreated a mini version of your store.
That's right, we have. We've set up our baskets filled with our sandwiches, so people can come up here and have lunch. And obviously we've got a selection of our delicious cakes, and lots of lovely people serving. And they've done us proud, actually, because we've got...
like a little cafe area,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, the balcony area, and the tables that overlook the show. And it's all really exciting.
So you sit up here, have one of your nice sandwiches, and take a look at people fighting to get to the gin stall downstairs. That seems pretty good. How long has the Norfolk Street Deli been around for?
The Norfolk Street Deli, it's probably been around for about 7 or 8 years now, but I took it over January 2013, and we now have two delis. We've got one in Papworth and one in Norfolk Street. And we needed the other one to supply Cambridge, because we were just getting so many lunches, and the actual serving area was too compact, so we couldn't really cater for people properly. So
it's an interesting area, Norfolk Street, really. It's almost like Islington. You've got the Labour Party headquarters down the road. You've got, more importantly, the Norfolk Street Bakery as well. There's a couple of restaurants across the way.
Adela at the bakery, she does amazing things there, and we're always getting mistaken for the bakery, so we're having to send them down there, and people keep coming in and asking if we've got custard tarts, which we don't obviously do.
But the area itself, you know, it's not off the beaten track, but you can't describe it as being on it either.
No, it's interesting. I think we do really well because we're quite close to Anglia Ruskin, and we do lunches for them, and we have the sandwich round as well that goes into the science park in Cambridge, so we're doing really well with that. So there's lots of different strings to our bow, really. And I think because we're doing lots of different things, it works. You know.
Do you think that's the secret of whether it was, if it was just a shop that did all these nice little Italian pastas and all the other things?
Yeah, I think if it was just a shop, I think we'd struggle. Mm. But because it has so many other things going on, I think it's pretty good. Yeah, pretty good indeed.
And Eat Cambridge, how long have you been here for?
How long have I been at Eat Cambridge?
Yeah,
this is our third year now.
Okay.
And it's amazing. I love this show so much.
What's special about it?
It's just got the stalls are so interesting. Such good, interesting, very good quality stalls here. And it's nice for people to come and be able to try things and sample stuff. So, yeah, it's all really, really good. Really, really pleased. Yeah.
Okay, Caroline, thanks very much for speaking to us. I'll let you get back to the sandwiches. Looking for love again. Lee Morris at Cambridge 105. Love again. It's Summer Saturday. We are live from the Cycle Lane, just outside of the Corn Exchange. We've been there all for most of the afternoon to cover Eat Cambridge, and I'm pleased to say that one of the organisers, Heidi, has joined us in Oliver, the outside broadcast van, to tell us how it's all gone. You must be exhausted, Heidi.
Yeah, just a little bit.
So what would be your... Because it's not just today. That's the thing we should make clear to people who maybe just tuned in for the first time. There's been a whole fortnight, really, of events.
Yeah.
And this main event this afternoon and this morning is the culmination of all of that.
Yeah, so this year the main event's at the end of the 2 weeks. So we've had fringe events that have built up to this event throughout, which has been really exciting. There's been lots of buzzing events and excitement building on Twitter and things like that, and in the interviews you've had on Flavour 105. It's been really good, and today has been amazing.
It's quite interesting. I was speaking to somebody a little earlier on this afternoon and talking about the Tim Hayward, funnily enough, the social media aspect of the food scene in Cambridge. It's a community of its own almost,
yeah,
isn't it?
Definitely, definitely. It's really interesting to see which events have attracted the social media people and which events we've turned up to, and it's been a completely new crowd of foodies. So it really has changed each year. We've got our hardcore followers, but we've definitely reached a lot of new people this year
as well. Where are the new people coming from? Are they people from around Cambridge who are interested in the food scene, maybe only particular aspects, so they're going to the event which most appeals to them? Or is there also people who are maybe coming into Cambridge from, I guess London's the most obvious place, but there's other cities and towns nearby, Newmarket or... Royston, but where might most of the people be coming from?
I think there definitely have been more coming from around Cambridge. The fringe events, of course, haven't just been in Cambridge, they've been in Cambridgeshire. And also, I've noticed people are coming in groups, you know, work colleagues are bringing other work colleagues, people are telling their friends. I think just over the 3 years, the word has spread much more now. I've also been recognising little groups of followers that we might see at Food Park and places like that. So there's other foodie things happening that is spreading the word as well.
But that's the interesting thing, because we've talked about on Flavour quite often the whole concept of supper clubs, for example, which seem to be very popular. And you've got many small independent businesses, be it Chocolat or the people at Burwash Manor, for example.
Yeah.
All of these people are contributing in to the Cambridge food scene.
Yeah, definitely. And they've got great stuff going on all year round. It's just that in these 2 weeks, we showcase it to people that might not normally stumble upon them. And the theme of this year's festival in particular was collaboration. So we really encouraged, you know, these little independent shops, cafes, whatever, to look at doing something with a different chef or a different restaurant, a different venue, to make it really collaborative. And that's what a lot of the independent food scene is about here.
Do you think there's evidence that people are coming, perhaps from last year, coming to Eat Cambridge and then going on to maybe sample and use the businesses local to them, the local food businesses, throughout the year, and they're not just coming here, getting some nice cheese, getting some nice meats, and then toddling off home again and using the supermarket?
Yeah, definitely. I don't think it's just a shopping opportunity at the main event. There are people that I've walked past today and heard saying, oh yeah, we had yours last year, we're stocking up again now. You know, there's lots of products that has become a staple part of their diet, if,
and people,
if you will.
And people also use it like a learning experience as well to discover maybe, you know, one of the most exciting things, really, to me at least, has been the businesses, you know, they're starting off. They're starting off, it's a hobby. Oh, now it's two people and four and six and eight. So it's growing the local economy at the same time.
Yeah.
And that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's great to see them grow. And Eat Cambridge is so small in terms of the team that runs it and the number of stallholders that we keep in touch quite a lot over the year. And it's great to hear their news and to see what products they've got coming out. And a few of them have got new branding, which is always nice to see. So, yeah, it's definitely all growing.
So where does Eat Cambridge go from here then? This is year three. I presume you'll be moving into year four as well, will you?
Yeah, well, I hope to not do so much of it by myself this year.
We should explain. we mentioned, if you're listening to Brian O'Reilly's programme this morning, when I spoke to Heidi earlier, and initially there was a team of three.
Yeah.
And it was yourself, and it was Caroline, and it was Sian. And whilst Sian is still here, she is with child.
Well, so she's about to give birth. I think she's definitely ready to. The baby was due on the 19th, so a few days ago, so she's still waiting. But yeah, she couldn't
With us in spirit. But obviously that, you know, whilst that's great news for Sian and her family, that obviously put pressure on to you, I guess.
Yeah, but we've had some great volunteers. We've had people helping out, like you might remember Carrie from Pavitt's Pies.
I do, yes.
She's helped out a lot. Lindsay Spellman, she's been managing the talks today and introducing them and, you know, making lots of new friends herself. So, we've had a good team of volunteers to help. Mm. So I haven't had to do it completely alone. But yeah, next year we would like to make it bigger in some way. But we need a team behind us to do that. We'd like to add a kind of live cooking element. So that comes with maybe some kind of larger space.
Good food show, perhaps. That's the sort of thing they might have.
Even something small, but just a space where we can have chefs cooking, because people love to meet the chefs and hear from them, but also to see them actually in action.
Ainsley Harriet might be available. There's been a campaign, I don't know if you're familiar with this, a campaign started by someone in Cambridge to get him as the new face of the £20 note.
Wow.
And the petition, the last time I looked, had about 10,000 likes for it. So, you know, it's entirely possible that he'll have a lot to thank Cambridge for.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've got, hopefully, chefs lining up. We've got some great local chefs at the moment. The Hole in the Wall, for example, Alex Rushmer from there, he put on a fantastic tasting menu for us this year. And we'd love to have him involved in a bit more depth, you know, have him cooking up something in front of people. Yeah, there's all sorts of possibilities.
I guess that's the next dimension, really, to it,
yeah,
isn't it? You see little things like Chocolat were doing their nice little things with the hazelnuts and dipping in the chocolate to that.
But yeah, we had a butchery demo today, for example, but that was kind of a small pop-up going on. We still want the main event to exist, but maybe an additional live cooking area.
Right, okay.
That we could add. That would be a good one.
And something which a lot of people have asked as we've been going around is how Eat Cambridge is set up as a business. You mentioned volunteers, but does all the money which is made from this get ploughed back into the food scene and for next year's event? What happens?
Yeah, so we really, it's run just as a community organisation, and we just cover costs. So we have to pay for the hire of the corn exchange and things like that in the usual way as a business would, but then we just cover that, and any money that's left, we've invested a little bit in the past in the website. It just all goes back into the festival.
Well, I guess the work starts here, doesn't it, really?
Yes.
for Eat 2016, which sounds dreadful to think about.
Every year we say we need to start planning earlier as well, so we'll have a few weeks off and then get back to it at the end of the summer.
Yeah. Well, Heidi, thanks very much for coming to see us in our little van, and we've enjoyed coming to see you in the Corn Exchange. I know that the Flavour team have been kept busy doing some interviews in the run-up to the event as well.
Yeah, so. Well, it's been fantastic to have you here today and throughout the festival. It's been really great to have you involved, so thank you.
I'll do it all again next year. Heidi, thank you very much. Great event.
Thank you.
Best of luck.
Thanks very much.
We'll try and chat with a few more people. We've got some pre-recorded interviews, which we did a little earlier on in the day. But here's the Police and Message in a Gin Bottle.
That's a message in a gin bottle from the police, particularly appropriate after Julian's visit to the gin stall earlier on, although someone took his gin sample away from him. I don't think he's quite got over it yet, have you?
I got it back, it's fine. I've got another guest with me, and we're going to talk chilies now, and with me is...
Ben Jackson.
And Ben, welcome to Cambridge 105. Make yourself nice at home in our little van here. We've moved outside. I guess inside, people have pretty much done. They're packing up and ready to go home.
It always amazes me how quickly a food hall can, like a food fair can pack down. It's literally, done in half an hour. Very impressive, yeah.
Do you do many of these during the course of the year?
Yeah, I do. I try and get out to as many food fairs as possible. It's a great time to sort of, sell directly to people, have conversations, get people's impressions of your products, so it's a good opportunity.
And for a business like yours, and we'll come to talk about that in detail in a moment or two, but I guess meeting the public like this face to face is possibly the best publicity and promotion you can do to sell your wares.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very important part of the mix. And in terms of accessibility, it's very accessible from my point of view to do publicity, as you say. I mean, the other options are normally very, very expensive. And I think that, I think that the public want to meet, people who are producing artisan products.
And by the other options, this is like advertising or web promotion, that sort of thing?
Yeah, advertising, web promotions, all those things. They sound great and glitzy and glamorous, but they're actually very expensive. And often, because they don't necessarily have a personal touch, like, meeting somebody face-to-face, you kind of, sometimes you don't always see the return that you might think you would.
And I guess in a roundabout way, this is kind of the best targeted advertising. You know that everybody who walks through that door is interested in original, often local, sustainable products which they can take home and pop in their larder.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that one of the critical things about Eat Cambridge particularly is the way the people who organise it drive it so well. I mean, it is one of... I've been doing it ever since it started. I launched my first sauce range at Eat Cambridge on the first year, and they are absolutely amazing. They really know how to drive people.
Is it because they also understand the food as well? It's quite often my sort of daily job away from Cambridge 105, I do quite a few conferences for one thing or another, and quite often they're produced, if you excuse the analogy, sausage factory style. They're just, people roll up, they organise the conference, and then they go on and tackle the next industry. Whereas here, the people who are involved, we heard from Heidi a few moments ago, they know their food, they're involved in the local food scene, and they know Cambridge as well.
Yeah, I think that is very much the case. I mean, it's really important that they have that knowledge of food as well. I mean, I've been running my business for 5 years, and I've been on food fairs that do what you say. They literally are doing county fairs or country fairs every other weekend through the whole season, there's just not that same connection. And I think it's really important.
So tell me about your product ranges then. Chili sauce, I'm thinking reggae sauce already, but this will be something just a little bit different, I suspect.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our products are all sort of, they're more steeped in the sort of Latin American, Mexican themes. A lot of the recipes that we do are based around recipes that are from Mexico or Brazil or Peru, those sorts of places.
And where do you get the chilies from?
We do a Peruvian sauce, and that the chilies for that actually come from Peru. They are Peruvian grown.
Right, so they get shipped in once every, I don't know how long how often you'd get them delivered, but they'll get delivered to you, and then yourself and your colleagues will turn them into the sauce, bottle them up. Is that kind of how it works?
Yeah. I mean, they basically come over. Actually, part of the processing happens over there, because what they do is they take the chilies and they put them into a mash form and mature them down, and that actually boosts the flavour as well. So, and then they come over here, and then we make them up into the finished sauce. Yeah.
How many sauces do you have in your range at the moment?
At the moment, we've got 9. Yeah, we'll probably add a couple more later on in the year, something like that.
And where are they sold? Is it just the food fairs, or is there an online element, or perhaps also maybe picking them up in some local stores?
Yeah, we do them online. We also sell throughout independent food halls and farm shops, places like Burwash Larder, Gog Hills Farm Shop, our local stockists, but we've got stockists of that type throughout the UK, in Northern Ireland, all over.
Okay, well, well done. Thanks for coming to speak to us, and I dare say we'll see you here next year as well.
You definitely will. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for that. Back to you, Tim.
Thank you very much. We're going to have another piece from Julian now, because we're running out of time, actually. We've got lots of stuff to bring you. So here is Julian speaking earlier on to the Snug, who had a cocktail bar just in the entrance of the Corn Exchange today.
So I'm here at the Snug bar stand, and with me I've got...
Caitlin and Molly.
OK, and you're split from the two Snugs that there are in Cambridge, is that right?
Both Linsfield Road and Grafton.
OK, so what are you going to be serving up here for people who come along?
We have a selection of cocktails and non-alcoholic cocktails as well. Most of them are from our favourites page, and then we have some food as well.
Yeah, we've got some Scotch eggs and sausage rolls, all homemade in our bars.
The Scotch eggs and cocktails, do they usually go together?
Bar nibbles, quite popular.
Okay.
Yeah, just get a little bit of a snack.
Yeah. And what happens when people come on? Do you do all the tossing routine and the throwing the glass behind your back and all that?
We will give it a go.
Okay, we'll look forward to seeing that a little later.
Yeah, and some fancy moves.
How long have you both been in the trade for?
I've been with the Snug 3.5 years.
And I've only been with Snug since September, but I'm learning quickly.
Okay, what tempted you in?
It's just a great fun bar to work for. Everyone's got a really great family atmosphere, and it's good to learn as you go, you know, loads to learn.
Great teams, they kind of drag you into it, but once you're there, it's good atmosphere, busy weekends, just great to be there.
I can imagine it gets really rushed off your feet at times. You know, I can imagine sort of like the Wednesday lunchtime shift, not so good, and then Friday comes along and you just completely run off your feet.
No, when it's busy, it's when it's most enjoyable. It's when there's not a lot going on that it gets more tiring, whereas on a busy Friday night, the atmosphere, the buzz, the guests, they're all happy, they're having a great time and a laugh, we put on some good music, so we enjoy it when we go there.
And what are the popular cocktails at the moment? Do these things go in waves, if you like, where one sort of not quite so popular for a while then comes back again perhaps later on?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we rewrite our menu every year, and the favourites are normally updated. At the moment, I'd say something like a Porn Star Martini is quite popular, whereas classics like a Mojito and a Long Island always stick around. We have just redone our menu though, and we've now got 100 cocktails, and we've put on 22 new cocktails, I believe. So some Snug originals in there as well, and then just some classics that keep coming and going.
Do you have to learn them all, how to do them, or do you have like a recipe chart hidden up behind the bar somewhere?
No, we don't have a recipe chart. We all know our cocktails and we all learn them off by heart, so
training goes into it. Yeah, but it's definitely worth it.
Okay, what are your two personal favourites?
Mine's definitely the Porn Star Martini. I love the passion fruit.
And I like a Junebug. It's a tropical cocktail.
Okay, girls, thank you very much for speaking to Cambridge 105. I'm pleased to say they're here all day.
Well, they're not there anymore, actually, because it's closed. But that was Julian talking earlier on to the guys at the Snug. We've had a bit of a saucy show today. We've had a bit of spanking some mints and some Porn Star cocktails. I don't know. It's somebody will be in trouble soon. I've got a message from Dom Smith, who's been reporting at the beer festival for us today. We've got another piece that we're going to try and bring you before 5 o'clock, but he does say they've had to close one of the bars at the beer festival today, but not because they've run out of beer, but because they've actually run out of volunteers. There's a lack of staff today. So if you are listening to this and you've got nothing to do this evening, you want to pop out and help at the beer festival, your time would be much appreciated. They're looking for more people to help out tonight, because obviously you can't drink all the beer without the people to serve it. So if you are interested, pop down to Jesus Green and they'll be very pleased to see you. We've got some more reports. Cambridge Carbon Footprint and also the English Spirit Distillery. We'll bring those two for you. Plus, we're also trying to track down Lee Chambers' interview where she spoke earlier on to one of the people that was giving a talk from the Gogmagog Hill Farm Shop about cheese making. We'll bring you that before 5 o'clock, and hopefully this piece on the beer festival as well. It's Cambridge 105, it's Summer Saturday, and this is the Decemberists. Summer Saturday from Cambridge 105, that's Cavalry Captain from the Decemberists. So you've heard a lot of Julian today. He's been doing most of the reporting, bless him, from Eat Cambridge. But Lee Chambers did pop along earlier on because somebody told her there was some cheese around. And here she is talking to Charles from the Gogmagog Hill Farm Shop.
I'm with Charles Bradford from the Gogmagog Hills Farm Shop. Charles has just finished a talk about cheese. Charles, I didn't realise that actually the Gogmagog Farm Shop is home for you, literally.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, I moved there. Well, I've moved back there after living in London for a number of years. But yeah, my great grandfather moved there in 1919 after the First World War. And yeah, it's been one of these places that's been sort of passed down sort of throughout the generations. And yeah, my great grandfather, my grandfather, my father, and now myself. But as a farm, it's a very, very small little farm, and it's struggled a little bit over the years. But we've just been diversifying it with our farm shop.
And you've been selling cheese, and you're talking about cheese. How did you first get into cheese making?
Well, it's quite an interesting question about the cheese, really. And as I was just highlighting in my talk, actually, you know, cheese is one of those things that's terrified me for many years. I have, in fact, like if I think back to sort of 70s and 80s, you know, growing up, my only association with cheese was the big blocks of yellow cheddar, which has got pretty characterless, you know, lacked flavour, lacked any sort of depth, really. And then even when I moved away and I lived in London, things I'd never dare go into one of the specialist cheese shops or one of the butchers or the wine shop or anything. And so actually, as the business has developed, what I've done is try to break those barriers down. So there's no such thing as a stupid question, and hopefully, yeah, people. Why should people be worried about their ignorance about food and wine and things? I think that's really, really important. As a result of that, as we've built our shop up, we've worked very, very closely with small-scale cheese producers. I mean, we're very, very fortunate to be joined by Johnny Crickmore. And Johnny's just been explaining to us how he makes the Baron Bygood, which is the UK's best unpasteurised brie. It's based on the French Brie de Meaux. And it's absolutely stunning. He's only been making this for 2 years. It's yeah, very, very impressive.
It is absolutely stunning. I can confirm that. I had a taste of it, and it's unpasteurised. Why is that important?
Again, unpasteurised milk is something. It seems a bit of a novelty to us now, and quite actually quite new. If we look back over the past sort of century or so. The cheese industry in the UK has changed so much. I mean, pre sort of 1800s or so, you know, cheese was made on farms as surplus milk that was supplied to the local community, and then after that it was we then had the Industrial Revolution, and with that came the trains, railways, and so then all of a sudden milk was being transported into cities, and we had a huge decline in the amount of sort of small farmhouse cheeses that were made. Then you had the First World War and then the Second World War. Obviously, there was a huge pooling of resources, and milk was essentially put together, and it became even illegal after 1939 to make anything but a hard cheese. You can understand that. You know, we had rationing and things in place. The point about pasteurized or unpasteurized cheese is that during all this process and changes to agricultural policy, that actually milk became and cheese itself became mass produced, and it then became the thing to do according to all the governments to actually pasteurize the milk, because they were so worried about listeria. And as part of that, everything, all the cheesemakers were almost forced to become to pasteurise their milk. And that's, thankfully, there's been a few people flying the flag for raw milk, as it's known. One of the key people there who's won a Lifetime Achievement Award this year, Randolph Hodgson from Neal's Yard Dairy. I mean, he won this Lifetime Achievement Award from the BBC Food and Farming Awards, which is really, really significant. He's been flying the flag and kind of going very, very much against the tide to keep raw milk and unpasteurized milk cheese in production. He didn't win the fight with Stilton, as you know, a lot of people now know that Stilton is only made with pasteurized milk. That was never, ever the case. But thankfully, there are small-scale producers making raw milk cheese again now. And it's, as we've just been tasting, it's absolutely fantastic.
And so many different types of cheeses today. What's your favourite cheese?
Oh wow, that is an interesting question. My favourite cheese. Well, the one that I've actually got the taste of at the moment, of course, is the Baron Bygod, which is, I have to say, it's really, really good. And I find it really encouraging when, I don't even know if I should say this, but really the fact that the people have been saying, wow, that is better than French. Or some people are saying, is that French? You know, it's got kind of all those sort of characteristics. I think it's also particularly interesting. Now, we're talking about these small-scale farmhouse producers. Actually, you know, there are now more farmhouse cheeses being produced in the UK than there are in France. And when you say that to people, they're like, really? I mean, that's absolutely the case. You know, there's a really, really exciting cheese culture going on in the UK now.
And one final question. We're at Eat Cambridge. You're saying this is your third year being here. How important is it to have something like this in the city?
Well, we're absolutely delighted to support Eat Cambridge for its third year. Cambridge, as many people know, has been known to be a bit of a clone town, that there's not been much in terms of independent food shops any types of independent shops and things, to be honest. It's great to see it being absolutely packed down here. There is a real interest, a hunger, if you like. You know, people are really interested in what they're eating. There's some great talent out there. I'm very, very proud to be supporting Eat Cambridge, and you know, we will continue to, and I hope it continues to be such a success.
Thank you, Charles. Have a good day.
That was Charles from the Gogmagog Hill Farm Shop talking to Lee Chambers earlier on after he had done a talk on cheese and the making of it. And I bought some cheese from his shop, so I will report back once I've eaten that to let you know what that is like. It's Summer Saturday from Cambridge 105. Coming up at 5 o'clock, it's our Italian programme, Radio Dante. At 6, Jason Allen. And at 7 o'clock, we'll be doing Eurovision 2015. As soon as I finish here, I'm getting on a private plane over to Vienna to go and cover the Eurovision Song Contest. At 7 o'clock tonight. Looking forward to that. We'll bring you some more reports, though, before we go. This one from the Eat Cambridge event that we've been covering today. It's the English Spirit Distillery, and Julian had a chat with these guys earlier on.
So what do we have here?
Well, we have one of the few distilled gins made in the UK, which means I have to start by making my own vodka, which I make from local sugar beet, and then redistill solely with botanicals. In this case, 5 different sorts of coriander, crushed macadamia nuts, juniper berries, and fresh zests. Lovely over crushed ice with a few salted capers.
And all these sourced locally from... You're based in Dullingham, is that right?
Yeah, we're based in Dullingham. Obviously, some of the things don't grow in this country, but where possible, we do try and grab them locally.
Okay, let's give this a little bit of a taste then. Ooh, that's not bad, is it? That's kind of nice little warming thing as it goes down as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've won quite a lot of prizes. We're supplying that to the Queen, so it's highly regarded.
I wasn't aware Her Majesty was into the gin. I was aware of the Queen Mother's fondness.
I can only speak for the household, okay. Rather than Her Majesty. So, yeah.
I think you're sworn to secrecy, really, are you?
Little I could say.
So how far generally do you ship? Is it not just in Cambridgeshire and to Buckingham Palace?
No, we make between 2,000 to 3,000 bottles a day, and we supply about 15 different countries in total.
How many people do you employ?
6 at the moment.
Okay, and has that grown over the years?
Oh, very much so, yeah. We started with 2. So, yeah.
And these sort of businesses, this is one of the intriguing things to me of something like Eat Cambridge. There's lots of small businesses that are making a good living, employing 6 people, 8 people, 4 people, and they're all sort of contributing to the local economy. Is food made for that?
Well, I think food's certainly made for it, but you know, on a wider point, small businesses are the major employer in the UK. There are around about 4 million of them, employing a vast number of people and contribute the vast body of national insurance and tax.
And how do you normally publicise yourself? Obviously, events like this, do you do it online, adverts in appropriate publications?
We generally don't tend to advertise because we find it's simply a waste of money. What we find, like a lot of small businesses, is make cracking products and get great referrals and good word of mouth.
Yeah,
and that's really does work.
That's good. Thanks for your time. Pleasure. Have a good day.
And that concludes Summer Saturday from Eat Cambridge for this week. Summer Saturday is back next Saturday afternoon from 2 o'clock. We'll be live from Guido Street in our studio, bringing you some reports before we're back out again on the road over the course of the next couple of weeks. Thank you, Julian.
Oh, thank you very much. It's been quite fun in there, really.
It has indeed, yes, definitely. Stay tuned. Radio Dante is up next, and I'll see you in just a couple of hours live from Vienna.
I'm off for some more gin.
For the Eurovision Song Contest.